Labas, and thanks again for tuning into Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. And make sure you tell all your friends that they can listen on live streaming audio over the internet anywhere in the world. We're going to continue with our reading of God Give Us Wings by Felicia Precaris Brown, who lives in Northern California right now, and tells the story of her family's escape from Lithuania, the Baltics, when the Russians finally invaded for the second time. And again, reading for us, and we really appreciate it, is Laima Baipšienė. Here is Life in the Camps. We'll be right back.
Trečia para naktis bučiuoja mano kūną. Švelniai glosto akis ir akmenų karūną. Trečia para nuo blakstienų laša, o išalkęs dangus mano rankos prašo.
Thanks again for tuning in to Independent Lithuanian Radio. Just to bring you up to speed on the book, God Give Us Wings, the story right now is being told about St. John's Night, Joninis, and all the pranks going on. So there's quite a bit of humor included in the story as we continue. Thank you again, Laima Baipšienė, for reading for us.
When she had everyone's attention, she brandaged a huge kitchen knife and started caterwauling melodramatically about the fickleness of her younger lover who had abandoned her for a sweet young thing. She wailed that her only recourse had been to take a sharp knife and stab herself in the heart, appropriate gestures, so that the world would know how scorching her love for him. Pasemus aštrupėlį širdį sau pervėrio, kad žinoto visas šviesas kaip karštai mylėjo. Could never heard a mature audience laugh so hard and was amazed. It was practically unheard of among Lithuanians for a woman to make herself look ridiculous, and the entire camp gave her a standing ovation for being such a good sport. The celebration lasted until sunrise, and included many rounds of jumping over burning logs by the younger folk. Milda enjoyed every last minute, but I fell asleep long before dawn. The evening's activities had impressed me unforgettably. It was the first time in my memory that I had seen adults act silly and laugh uproariously without being drunk. It was liberating. Apparently, it was safe for the adults to let go of their worries, their gravity, self-control, even their dignity, and act as merry as kids. If they have fun, I can too, I thought. I felt a huge relief thinking that I could finally give up on trying for adult wisdom. Excitement gripped the camp on July 9th. News had reached us that a solar eclipse was coming that afternoon. The wiser and better informed tried to explain the science behind an eclipse, to minimize the superstitious fears that troubled many of the less educated. The morning was spent in searching out pieces of glass and darkening them with smoke so that we could look at the sun without blinding ourselves. Wiser folk insisted that glass smudged with smoke did not provide enough protection from eye damage. But who listens to the wise? Smarter heads followed instructions to make a tiny pinhole in one piece of paper and then placed another piece some distance behind it. The advancing shadow the moon spread over the sun became visible, projected through the opening onto the second piece of paper. The eclipse was deep, though not total. It was an eerie feeling to see the early afternoon turn into twilight. I noticed that the birds became confused. As darkness increased, they stopped twittering and settled down on their nest to roost. Crickets, who hide during the day, started to chirp as though night had come. The normal order of things was going haywire. I saw many older people glancing at the disappearing sun in consternation and crossing themselves fearfully. The eclipse became the chief subject of conversation and instruction for days. The weeks in Hassendorf were a restful period. Everyone in camp needed to recover from the years of war and the flight from Lithuania to escape the terror of the returning communist regime. All conversations eventually returned to those two themes, fear and flight. Many families had been torn apart by the recent events. Administrators of the camps in the British and American zones set up a postal delivery system so people could search for friends and relatives. Almost daily, there were cries of joy as news arrived from other camps that a son or a daughter, parents or siblings had survived. We began to put on weight. There was enough food for everyone, although Father, as head of food services, had a constant challenge due to the hit-or-miss British delivery of supplies. One week, only potatoes would arrive. Another, a truck full of cherries. Refrigeration was unavailable. When meat was delivered, the kitchen staff had to cook it at once. Nonetheless, there was always bread. We often had eggs, and in summertime, produce made good soups. I barely had grown since I was six. Now, at 8.5, I started stretching upward. As August arrived, the camp organizers realized that they would be no longer put off dealing with a problem that had been staring them in the face from day one. There was no building available in Camp Hassendorf to use for a school. Every child and teen of school age had lost a year of instruction in 1944 to 1945. During the final struggles of the war, the Germans made it clear they would not accept foreign children into their school system. They had their own surplus of refugees to absorb. Of course, most of us younger children didn't care, but wiser older teens were beginning to worry about their future. The executive committee appealed to the commander in charge to do something about a school, but the British military was not interested in constructing a building for which had been designated as just a temporary assembly center. Toward the end of August, the commander offered a choice to families of school-aged children. He would transfer us to whichever bigger camp we selected where schools were planned. He mentioned that authorities were in the process of organizing a large camp for Lithuanians, Latvians, and Estonians at Dovrevorden, located about 22 miles south of Hassendorf. The camp was to be named Camp Montgomery for the hero of the British troops, Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery. From the commander, we learned two new acronyms that thenceforth ruled our lives, UNRWA and DP. He said that starting in September 1944-45, the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, always referred to as UNRWA, would take over the running of all displaced persons, or DP camps, in the American, British, and French zones of occupied Germany. The occupying military forces would remain responsible for maintaining order and dealing with crime. Finally, we refugees had a special designation. We were DPs. Lithuanians soon invented a nickname based on the acronym DP. We called ourselves Dievo Paukšteliai, God's Little Birds. After the meeting with the commander, families gathered to confer. Everyone who had school-aged children insisted on relocating to a camp with facilities for their education. The majority chose the camp still under construction, hoping to have some influence on its character. I remember mother and father inviting friends, old and new, to join them in the move. Many residents who did not have school-aged children, but who had an interest in teaching or providing cultural activities for the younger generation wanted to come as well, especially those who enjoyed working together in Hassendorf. As August ended, the British provided a fleet of trucks and drove us to our new home, Camp Montgomery in Dovrevorden. I remember the disappointment we all felt when we saw our new quarters. The location of the camp had been an enormous gunpowder factory. The sight of black, soot-covered concrete blocks caused an instant impression. The buildings assigned to the refugees were the barracks, kitchen, office, and administration buildings formerly occupied by slave laborers and their supervisors. Once again, we were assigned to a barrack of triple-tier bunks, indiscriminately housing a mix of freed men, women laborers, family units, priests, single people, and couples. If you were a DP, you went first come, first served. Once again, we faced a dangerous lack of sanitation. It was the most uncivilized, bug-infested, frightening place imaginable. There was no privacy at all. The constant din of overcrowded humanity, arguing, babies crying, men drinking and yelling. Mother said it felt like a madhouse. For the first time, I experienced a new kind of unidentifiable fear whenever I went to bed. Though I should have felt safe in the middle bunk, my mother below me and Milda above, there was one man in the bunk across the aisle who gave me the shivers. Every time I had to take off my clothes to get ready for bed, I saw him staring at me in a way that I could not identify but did not like. He never touched me, but there was something about him I instinctively knew was not right. It was worse for Milda. Many men considered my sister a real beauty at 16. Fair game, whether she was willing or not. Because of a misplaced shame, it took her a few days to confide in Mother that in the wee hours of the morning, presumably when everyone was asleep and snores shook the air, she could feel searching hands trying to get under the covers of her top bunk. She did not know whether to scream or pretend to be asleep and hope that whoever it was would go away. She was embarrassed to raise a fuss and wake everyone, but finally she complained to Mother, and Mother went berserk. Mother told me years later that she called together an urgent meeting of women who, in a vocal crowd, marched to the UNRWA administrator's office and declared that enough was enough, that they had not escaped from Soviet rapists just to be molested by their own twisted countrymen. Husbands and fathers were equally appalled. However, the UNRWA personnel, composed predominantly of U.S. civilians who had just arrived in Germany, completely incapable of dealing with the situation. They were just beginning to learn what chaos they had been given to organize. The angry delegation of parents asked the camp's administration to grant the executive committees of each nation the right to make rules for their fellow nationals and to police and expel troublemakers, with military police escort if needed. Such committees had worked well in the other camps under British military supervision, so why not under UNRWA? The proposal was accepted with relief. Job one was to put some order into the way space had been assigned to the residents. In Hassendorf, unmarried men and women were segregated into separate supervised buildings. To give a little privacy to families, men removed half of their bunk beds in the barracks. They had then erected wood partitions or hung old surplus tent material donated by the military to create tiny cubicles. Living conditions were still noisy and demeaning, but Milda and I no longer had to endure leers and groping hands. Soon, after our arrival in Camp Montgomery, Father discovered that his brother Carolus, his wife and son, had arrived at a DP camp not far from ours. As soon as it would be arranged, they came to visit us and to check if our living conditions were any better than in their camp. Father was excited. What a treat it would be to have at least one sibling for company. As they were approaching to greet us, the first words out of Uncle Carolus's mouth were, "Felicius, you're completely gray." It was true, but I had not noticed because it had happened imperceptibly over the past year. Even though he was 8 years older, Uncle's hair was still dark and curly. He wanted to move to Camp Montgomery to be near us, but his wife objected. She could not stand how ugly it was or how primitive the living arrangements. Father was elected by all three Baltic nations to be the leader uniting their separate executive committees. Everyone called him the camp's commandant, but his powers were extremely limited. Above him was the UNRWA director and his staff, and above them the British military commander of the region. However, Father accomplished a significant turnaround from chaos to order because of his diplomacy, understanding, reasonableness, and sheer charisma.
Lima, thank you again for reading for us from the chapter Life in Displaced Persons Camps from the book new book, God Give Us Wings, by Felicia Perecaris Brown, who now lives in Northern California in the San Jose area and has decided to tell the story of the escape of her family from the Russian invasion in World War II. We'll be right back.
Я у думені со два сетавою розкинеся туго.
Швелмусі ржолю дал неї ужмілоє миртиний куна.
Я у тус пиштий жозгані таво віжджос і щирді спурда.
You know, just a minute ago, through the door walked in Daria Francesco, and Daria is the co-president of the Daughters of Lithuania. The other co-president is Vilija Kiršonis. They were both elected 3 years ago, and I don't know how many of you attended. It seemed to me like a full house. On June 1st, they did a magnificent presentation and entertainment at St. Casimir's Parish Hall, where they talked about all the wonderful work that they do helping out orphanages and underprivileged children living in Lithuania. They started going about 5 years ago, and they go every single year. Daria, thanks for stopping in for a few minutes to talk to us.
It's my pleasure, Kaste.
Okay, so it's 5 years ago, and Daughters of Lithuania, you decide to go and do this work. I mean, what motivates you? What did you do? Take a cart full of toys, clothes? Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, yes, the Daughters of Lithuania is an organization that supports and provides both monetary and practical help for kids in Lithuania, not just in orphanages, but for private families as well.
Now, how do you pick these people?
Well, the daughter. Doing this work for many, many years and have established relationships with many of the orphanages. And then word gets around in the villages and other families in need get our contact information and contact us many years ago via, you know, snail mail, and now it's via email. And we try to help as many as we can. And we also started going regularly in order to vet these requests out.
Now, are these mostly like orphanages or churches, monasteries, a little bit of everything?
Well, most of the orphanages are related and around a parish, so they are faith-based. And actually, I do want to tell you that the kids in the orphanages aren't necessarily orphans. I would say that the majority of them have parents. It's just that they're very difficult situations at home. Cause them to be taken away for their own good until the parents can get their act together. So most of the kids in the orphanages have parents, but are there because their situations at home are bleak.
Now, this is interesting. It's something I wasn't quite aware of, in the sense that are the authorities taking the children away? In other words, you call and say, my neighbor is beating their child, my neighbor's an alcoholic.
Exactly.
That sort of a thing.
Exactly. Okay. And then the social workers come in, step in, evaluate the situation, and most of the time take the children away for their safety to these orphanages. Although, I have to tell you a very sad story. That in Papadche, there
Papadche.
Was Papadche is a very rural town between Vilnius and Kaunas, where one of the orphanages is located.
How many people live there? Give me an idea.
The Papadche orphanage handles about between 25 at the most, 30 kids between the ages of 2 and 18
and
years
of age. And in the town, there's maybe, 2,000 people?
Oh, the town's very small. That, I don't know the demographics of that, but very rural, very small. I would say no more than 2,000. You're right, yeah.
And what's the average age? I mean, is it all over?
Yeah, it ranges from 2 to 18, and they operate like a big family there. The director of that particular orphanage, Ruta Kanslerita, tries to create a family type of environment for the kids.
So you don't get the feeling sometimes that you, because, you know, the first interview I ever did on this show, 25 years ago, I interviewed Birute Milliron. I think you know who she is, and most of our listeners will.
Yes, of course.
And she, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, adopted the first Lithuanian child from Lithuania and brought her home. And she said it looked pretty bleak. I mean, she said the conditions looked terrible. And I'm trying to get a sense from you if it's more, you know, fun, nice colors on the walls, balloons, toys, or does it still seem kind of, you know, a little, I don't want to use the word sleazy, but I just can't think of a better word at this moment.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. I can't speak to that. I wasn't there 20 years ago at the orphanages, but I imagine that it's not as bleak as it was back then. There's a lot more contact with supporters such as the Daughters of Lithuania and other organizations that come in, and they do have the basics. We try to provide extra services, you know, like showing them that somebody cares, knowing, you know, sending specialty items that aren't necessarily included in their basic functions. So they do. We try to get them to know that somebody cares, somebody's thinking about them, and support them in those ways other than just their basic necessities.
Now, I believe you mentioned, physical things are sent, clothing, things like that, and also monetary help.
Yes.
Do they get audited? I mean, do you check and make sure that they're, you know, spending the money in a proper way, for lack of a better word?
Yes, we do. We don't even have to request that. They always offer to show us receipts for where the money was spent. Sometimes we even attach strings to some of the money that we give, requesting that these monies be specifically used to take the kids out for a trip to the beach, a trip to the museum. Things that we believe are very valuable in every child's education while growing up.
And how many orphanages now are you involved with?
Well, we are helping at Paparce, at Rombonis. We help the Kaunas Gausu Šeimų Bendrija, which is a group family organization. We help children in need in the rural village of Smalininkai. So we are across the board, as well as many private families. There's also smaller orphanages. They're called mini orphanages, and that would be the Gumulauskų Šeima out near Šiauliai.
They take in a lot of people, I understand.
Yes, the Gumulauskai isn't
sort of a huge foster family.
Exactly. They're a mini foster home. They're a private couple that can each, at the most, take 11 children. So there's 22 children there.
Now, do you do any work in Vilnius, around Vilnius?
Yes, we have an association. We have a relationship with the Kūdikiu, the Kūdikiu Hospital there, which is the infant hospital there.
Now, during that presentation on June 1st, there was a gentleman that I noticed on the video that you were showing. And I think his name was Kent.
Yes. That's
and he's not a Lithuanian guy.
No, but Kent is a very good friend of mine who, for so many years, has been listening to my stories of going there and of the work that I do. And he just kept getting more and more interested in finding out more about what it is that I do, and asked to help and go 1 year. And interestingly enough, that trip changed his life. He has fully fallen down the rabbit hole and is now very involved with the fundraising efforts and plans on going with us every year. So it opened his eyes up, and he really loves doing this work of love.
Now, has he ever done anything like this before? This is completely new to him.
No, it's new to him, but just being exposed to it and going there and feeling the love that you get from the children, not just giving, but what you receive is so overwhelming that he wants to continue doing it.
Now, I think you just mentioned he, or I did at least, that he speaks no Lithuanian, correct?
That's correct.
So how does he communicate with the kids, or does he?
It's the universal language of love.
Is that what it is?
Yes, it is.
Has he learned any Lithuanian?
Yes, he has. For Christmas, I gave him, a set of tapes. So he's been studying that, and we're going again this fall, so he'll be a little bit more prepared.
That is wonderful. Listen, Dadia, I really appreciate you stopping in and talking to us for a few minutes and telling us about the Daughters of Lithuania and the wonderful work that you're doing there. And say hi to Kent for me.
Thanks for the opportunity, Kastai.
Ačiū labai. Well, once again, we've run out of our half hour, or at least 28, 29 minutes of it. Little side story, a couple of years ago in Lithuania, I went out to visit one of these orphanages, you know, see where they were and located and all that, and I thought it was pretty interesting. And I saw this sign, you know, you're driving around Lithuania, and I saw this sign for, like, ferry. I didn't quite understand it. It showed, like, water, waves, and, like, a raft, like you could cross it. And I was like, you know, what could that possibly be? There's no ocean. There's no sea. What, they got no bridge over the local river? Anyway, I kept driving on this gravel road, and finally, there I came up on a hill. And there's this 6'6" guy, this, you know, should have been a basketball player, waving me forward. Come on, come on, come on. And I drive over, and he has me drive my car onto his wooden raft, his wooden ferry, and he ferries me across this little river to the other side so I could keep going on the highway back to Vilnius. Now, I forget what it cost me, but it was like, you know, ridiculously cheap. You know, it was like 20 lithite, which is, what, $7 at the time? You know, I gave him 10. And not to tell you what a great guy I am, but, you know, it was an experience, and that's what he does. He stands there all day. I asked him. He's been doing it for like 25, 30 years. He's this giant of a man, and he ferries people across the river one car at a time. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this human interest sort of interview we've been doing the last couple of weeks, and that you enjoy the next couple of weeks, where we'll be talking about the story of the escape of the Prekeris family from Lithuania during World War II and their life in the what you call displaced person camps in Germany and their eventual trip to the United States of America. This is Kęstutis Reividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio here at KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. Once again, KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. And of course, live streaming audio over the internet at www.ktym.com. KTYM.com. Please listen anytime, anywhere in the world, live at noon Pacific time. Iki pasimatymo, ačiū, bye-bye. Show.